Hey folks, this is Carrie Arentikai, reading Keep Track of Losing Days by Drafter, Chapter 4, Known Associates. So first of all, thank you to Drafter for letting me know that is in fact the correct pronunciation, Drafter like laughter. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I don't like to mispronounce people's names, and fandom names are sometimes difficult to parse. And of course, thank you for having blanket permission and also writing this fic. Okay, yeah, I feel like I want to talk, but I have nothing to say, and I really want to find out what happens next. So here we go. Okay, summary is a selection from the fic, so I'll just read. When they get back from Carp Tower, Wang Ji sees that the warrant for Wei Ying's phone records has come through. He spends the rest of the morning sifting through them. There isn't a lot there. Wei Ying, like most millennials, appears to avoid phone conversations wherever possible. He FaceTimes his sister regularly, but his text message history is pretty bare. Wang Ji's guessing he's got a few robust chat threads going on in WhatsApp or Signal or something. In recent weeks, however, he's received a series of calls and texts from unlisted numbers. Wang Ji scans through the records and finds the earliest such conversation from 3 weeks ago. Unlisted number. Hey, are you still interested in that project? Wei Ying. Who is this? Unlisted number. XY, kissy emoji. From Xingchen's? Don't tell me you already forgot me. I'm hurt. Wei Ying. Oh, hey. I was pee wasted that night. Don't take it personal. What's up? Unlisted number. I have a project for you if you're still looking for work. Wei Ying. Cool, what's the project? The thread ends there, but is immediately followed by a 7-minute phone call from an unlisted number, likely the same one. XY again. There's no other mention of those initials, but Wang Ji does a search for Xingchen to see if he can glean any additional context about who XY might be. There's only one other conversation in which the name is mentioned, as part of a text thread between Wei Ying and his roommates. Wei Ying. Sorry. Eyes scan down. I'm going to take 1 second. Okay. Not that I don't, like, obviously I care very much about the plot of this, but also I always get very excited when there's shippy moments. Okay. Wei Ying. I'll be on the roof if anyone needs me. Wen Ting. If you start dating a cop, Xiao Xingchen is going to be so pissed at you. Wei Ying. Lol. Tell XXC he can comment on other people's lives when he stops getting crushes on psychopaths. Wen Ying. Crying laughing emoji times 9. Wen Ting. I'm just saying. Wei Ying. Don't worry, it's not like that. He's like this upstanding citizen. I'm a literal gremlin. It would be like Prince Charming dating. Oh, okay, sorry. I can parse things. It's great. Okay. It would be like Prince Charming dating, IDK, a raccoon. Wang Ji pushes back from his desk in surprise, his face burning. Wei Ying's roommates thought they were dating? Wei Ying compared him to Prince Charming? Wang Ji is many things, but charming certainly isn't one of them. Wei Ying is nice to say it, but Wang Ji knows he's more like Prince Unfriendly, Prince Robot, Prince Permafrost. He's not sure what to do with this information. He's tempted to drop everything and read back over the entire text thread with Wen Qing and Wen Ying, but that wouldn't be a good use of his time right now. Reader's note, also probably super unethical, like everything that has been happening here. Okay. But I get it. We're good. You have no official relationship with him, and you want to find him, okay, but please don't read his text threads with his friends to see if he likes you. Okay. Anyway, Wei Ying had said it wasn't like that. He makes a note of Xiao Xingchen as a friend of Wei Ying's to possibly follow up with, and returns to his research. A week or so after the first exchange, another text from an unlisted number. Unlisted number. Dropped something off for you. Wei Ying. What the fuck is this? Unlisted number. We have a robust incentive program. Wei Ying. Still not interested. You can take it back. Unlisted number. Can't. Winky emoji. Bring it by NC if you want. We can talk. After that, several phone calls, most of which Wei Ying appears to have let go to voicemail. There's one more text. Unlisted number. Left you another little surprise. Kissy emoji. Call me. Shortly after that, a 5-minute phone call from Wei Ying to the unlisted phone. Wang Ji checks the dates. That last exchange was on Monday afternoon, the day Wei Ying disappeared. He shows Nie Mingjue what he's found, omitting the conversation between Wei Ying and his roommates, which is immaterial to the matter at hand. NC, Nie Mingjue muses. Nightless city? Has to be. Wang Ji agrees. We should go down there. See if we can find this XY person. Nie Mingjue frowns. Nightless City isn't the kind of place you should roll up on without some serious backup. Then we will take backup. I doubt Yao is going to go for putting extra people on this. I doubt Yao is going to go for us going down there, period. Not with an open major crimes investigation on the Wens. It's currently the best lead we have. During daylight hours, the risk should be minimal. So, best case scenario is that we piss off Yao and everyone in major crimes, and worst case scenario is that they never find our bodies? Nie Mingjue shakes his head. It's not a good idea. If I'm going to be murdered, I'd prefer not to be murdered in Belltown. This is our case. Major crimes can't fault us for investigating it. Well, that's bullshit, and you know it. Wang Ji hesitates for a moment before playing his final card. If you'd prefer not to be involved, I can go on my own. His partner's head snaps up. Wang Ji meets his incredulous look with a level stare. Wei Ying is missing. Time is running out. You are the stubbornest asshole I've ever met, Nie Mingjue grumbles. Wang Ji holds his gaze and waits. Nie Mingjue sighs. Obviously, I'm not letting you go in there alone. But for the record, this is a stupid idea and I hate you. Wang Ji exhales a silent sigh of relief. Thank you. Nie Mingjue stands up, stretches. Oh, come on. Sorry. Give me a second. We're going to just go for what we can here. I could have looked this up, but I'm not going to. Unless this is a neighborhood, but I think it's a person. Okay. I need to follow up on some stuff for the Bixuski break-in this afternoon. We'll have to go later on anyway. Staff probably won't be getting there much before 5. Try not to do something stupid and get yourself killed between now and then, all right? Wang Ji nods. In the meantime, I will keep going through the notebooks. Let me know if you need my help with the Bixuski thing. After Nie Mingjue leaves, Wang Ji pulls out Jin Zixuan's business card and stares at it, thinking hard. Wei Ying's brother works in Wang Ji's department. Wei Ying's brother-in-law works with, and is related to, Si Chen's boyfriend. How is it possible that his life could have run in parallel with Wei Ying's for so long before they met? What else is Wang Ji missing? He scowls at the business card and picks up his phone, tapping out the text before he can change his mind. It's Lam Wang Ji. Are you free for lunch? Scene break. The lobby of Jin Kor Tower is all pale leather and dark wood, crimson orchids and gold-framed mirrors. Can I help you? The receptionist asks from behind her gigantic wood and steel command center of a desk. I'm meeting someone here. Great. She swivels a touchscreen toward him. Go ahead and enter your information, and if I could see an ID, I'll make a photocopy and we'll get you a temporary badge printed. Can't I just... He gestures towards the tastefully appointed seating area. Wait for him down here. She gives him a plasticky customer service smile. We do require that all visitors to the building check in. He considers handing her his badge, just to be difficult, but meekly slides over his driver's license instead. He enters his name, cell phone number, the name of the person he's there to see, and the reason he's there to see them, lunch, into the form, and receives his driver's license back along with a printed out badge. Please have a seat over there, the receptionist says, gesturing to the same group of chairs Wang Ji had just suggested he wait in. I'll let him know you're here. Wang Ji settles into a leather chair, eyeing the security guard stationed at the elevators, who eye him right back. Most private security is a formality, but the way these men stand, backs straight, weight evenly distributed over their feet, heads up, eyes alert, says to Wang Ji that they mean business. They're both wearing full suits and blazers, a pretty formal look for Seattle, even in a swanky downtown office building. The boxy cut of the blazers and matching telltale budges indicate shoulder holsters. Jean Corps clearly isn't taking security lightly. Lan Wangji. Meng Yao comes striding out of the elevators in his cream-colored shirt and charcoal slacks, seeming more in his element here than he ever has in the Lan's apartment. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Have a nice lunch, Mr. Meng, the receptionist chirps. Meng Yao acknowledges her with a dimpled smile. I'm so happy you texted me, Meng Yao says as they walk out of the building. It's so funny. We both work downtown, but we never end up meeting up. We should do this more often. Wangji replies, trying to sound as non-committal as possible. Of course, I don't always have time to take a real lunch break during the workday, Meng Yao continues. Me either. But I've been thinking for a while how much I'd like to get to know you better. Meng Yao beams. Have you been to the cafe at the art museum? Si Chen and I ate there last time you met me for lunch. Wangji manages to make agonizing small talk with Meng Yao until they've been seated and ordered their lunch. People are less likely to walk out of an awkward conversation after they've already ordered food. So, Meng Yao says brightly, how are things down at the station? Any interesting new cases? Wangji clears his throat. Meng Yao, why didn't you mention at dinner last night that you know Wei Wuxian? Meng Yao's smile falters for a second, then returns brighter than ever. Oh, I wouldn't say that I know him. His sister is married to your brother. Well, I've heard his name, of course, Meng Yao chuckles, and I've met him in passing, but it's not like we're friends. Still, it seems an odd thing not to mention. Meng Yao sighs, looking tired. Lan Wangji, can I be honest with you? Wangji inclines his head. I don't know how much Si Chen has told you about, well, about me. Some. All I wanted, my whole life, was to be part of a family. Meng Yao says the word family with reverence, a holy incantation. It's the same way Wei Ying says the word, funnily enough. It's the same way Wei Ying says the word, funnily enough. It was always just my mom and me, and she was sick for so long before she died. His practiced businessman's smile is gone. When I found my father, it was one of the happiest moments of my life. The fact that I've gotten a whole career out of it is an unexpected bonus. But I'm not unaware that my father already had a family, one I'm not part of. My showing up. I imagine it was very painful for my father's wife. Painful for Meng Yao as well, no doubt, Wangji thinks, feeling like a bit of a heel. He's starting to see a bit of what drew Si Chen and Meng Yao to each other. The Lan brothers know all too well what it's like to lose your mother too young, to grow up with no one to rely on but yourself. Si Chen's been the only sweetness and softness in Wangji's life for more than 20 years. He can see why that sweetness might appeal to someone like Meng Yao. I know how close you and Si Chen are, Meng Yao continues. I had hoped to have a close relationship with my brother as well. He's a decent man, but I know it's not easy for him, having me around. Most of the time I try to keep my distance from Jin Zixuan. Our paths don't cross that often at work. Sales and operations have less to do with each other than you might think. And outside of work, it's rare for us to associate. So yes, he sighs, I'm aware that Wei Wuxian is Jin Zixuan's brother-in-law. But I wasn't exactly eager to expose my difficult relationship with my brother, who is also my co-worker, over dinner, especially with Nie Mingjue. He gives a little self-deprecating chuckle. I get the impression your partner isn't a huge fan of me. Wangji does not say, of course he is, what are you talking about, because Wangji does not lie. Nie Mingjue has been Si Chen's close friend for a long time. He is protective. Nie Mingjue would burn cities to ashes for the short list of people he really cares about, but Wangji's not going to say that either. Of course, Meng Yao says softly. They sit in silence for a while, Wangji feeling stiff and awkward and more guilty than ever about his total inability to like this man. After their server has dropped their food off, Meng Yao clears his throat. You know, Lan Wangji, you're one of the most important people in Si Chen's life. Wangji nods. This, of all the things in his life, is never in doubt. That makes you an important person in my life as well. Meng Yao's eyes are clear and frank. His smile is pleasant and guileless. There's no reason for Wang Ji to doubt his sincerity, but Wang Ji can't silence the part of himself that's asking, what's his angle here? I understand why you wanted to ask me about this, and it's to your credit that you're such a conscientious investigator. But I hope this won't be the last time we meet for lunch. I really would like to get to know you better. It would be nice if we could be friends. I know Si Chen would like that, Wang Ji says, because he cannot say, I would like that. Scene break, and we are back in a flashback. The realization that he is falling in love with Wei Ying both does and does not change Wang Ji's life. He still gets up at 5 each morning, meditates, gets to work early, bickers with Nie Mingzhui about paperwork, cooks dinner with Si Chen. He still meets Wei Ying on the roof and spends evenings in pleasant companionship, listening to Wei Ying ramble. On the other hand, while Wang Ji has been going through his normal routines, his mind has been compiling a growing list of the places he'd like to kiss Wei Ying. His eyelids, for one. The paper-thin, fluttering skin there. His wicked, smiling mouth, of course. The first knob of his spine, where it peeks out from his shirt collar. The palms of his quick, clever hands. The soft flesh above his hip bone, which Wang Ji has not actually seen, but has imagined in vivid, excruciating detail. He considers himself a good judge of people. He's a professional investigator, for pity's sake. But he has no idea what Wei Ying feels about him. He's still not sure why the man decided to aggressively befriend him in the first place. Wei Ying must have any number of friends. But he always seems genuinely delighted to see Wang Ji. He makes space for Wang Ji, rather than treating him like some kind of statue like most people do. He called Wang Ji Mai Lan Chan when Wang Ji gave him the key. The unguarded, surprised emotion in his face at the small gift has taken up permanent residence in Wang Ji's head. But Wei Ying is an incorrigible flirt, and Wang Ji can't pretend that Wei Ying touches him or flirts with him or laughs at him any more than Wei Ying does with anyone else. It doesn't really matter, anyway, because Wang Ji is quite certain he'd rather die 1,000 quiet deaths than tell Wei Ying how he feels. He can imagine the kindness, the pity, in Wei Ying's face as he lets Wang Ji down gently. And Wang Ji would rather die of thirst than of sorrow. Man, sorry, I need to take a moment with that line. Huh. Okay. He has to hope that his face doesn't betray him. He feels like his crush must be visible from space, but a lifetime of schooling himself into impassivity isn't going to waste now, and Wei Ying doesn't seem to notice anything. Nei Huaisang sends a group text. Lunch Saturday? Wang Ji has been eating Saturday lunches at the cafe. Wei Ying is usually too busy to say more than a quick hello, but he likes being there anyway, likes spending time with his friend even if they don't speak. Of course, now that he knows he's madly in love with Wei Ying, that attitude makes more sense. He finds himself reluctant to give up that time. He can't think of a reason not to suggest the cafe for lunch. He eats there often enough, and he knows his friends would enjoy the food. It's close to Mian Mian's place, and Ye Huaisang usually comes to the ID when the three of them hang out anyway. There's no reason for him to feel nervous. To hope Wei Ying likes his friends, or to hope that they will like Wei Ying, who will probably not have time to meet them anyway. It's a reasonable suggestion. As soon as they walk in, he knows he's made a terrible mistake, but it's too late to back out. This place is cute, Mian Mian says, slinging her bag into the booth ahead of her. She's in yoga pants and a sleeveless United State of Electronica t-shirt. On Saturdays, she's usually coming straight to lunch from yoga. I keep meaning to check it out. I know you've been coming here a lot. Just another hipster spot trying to gentrify the ID. Of course you like it, Nei Huaisang says in exaggeratedly pious tones. Meng Ji rolls his eyes. Huaisang and Mingzhui's condo is in Capitol Hill, above a pour-over coffee place that used to be one of Seattle's foremost grunge bars, so it's not like he has room to talk. So, what's good? Yan Yan unfolds the menu. Lan Wangji is just going to say whatever their blandest vegetarian food is, Nei Huaisang points out. Ooh, spicy chicken grain bowl. Wei Ying strolls up, order pad in hand. His t-shirt is a deep blue today, faded with many washings, but a nice contrast with his red apron and his tanned skin. His nails have been freshly painted, Wang Ji notices without hyperventilating at all, and are a deep crimson. He has a silver ring on one thumb. He sees Wang Ji's friends and grins in surprise. Wang Ji's heart takes that smile and presses it gently between the pages of his memory, to be examined in detail later. Lan Zhan, Wei Ying exclaims. Are these your friends? Yes. Hi, Mian Mian and Nie Huaisang sing in perfect, annoying unison. This is Nie Huaisang and Luo Qingyang. Wang Ji continues gamely, sending a please do not embarrass me glare to both of them that he already knows, through painful experience, will be completely ignored. Call me Mian Mian, everyone does, Mian Mian says, offering Wei Ying her hand with a wide grin and a flutter of her eyelashes. Nice to meet you, Mian Mian, Wei Ying replies, lingering over the handshake and giving Mian Mian the extra sparkly smile he reserves for attractive women. This is Wei Ying. He is my best friend, the love of my life, slowly killing me. My neighbor. Lan Zhan, you do have other friends, Wei Ying cackles. I was beginning to worry about him, he explains to Wang Ji's friends, who nod with matching expressions of amusement. Poor Lan Zhan, with no one to keep him company but some drunk asshole he found on the roof. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one who appreciates him. Wei Ying laughs, giving Wang Ji's shoulder an affectionate rub. Wang Ji goes still under his hand. Do you guys know what you want, or do you need another minute? Oh, we're definitely going to need a minute, Huaisang says, his eyes shining with mischief from behind his menu. You got it. Just yell if you need anything. Wei Ying's hand is still resting on Wang Ji's shoulder. He lets go with a squeeze and walks off. Thank you, Mian Mian sing-songs, watching him walk away. Wang Ji looks down at his menu, wishing he could actually implode under the weight of his embarrassment. Okay, says Nie Huaisang. Okay, now I see why you eat here so often. Seriously? Mian Mian is still staring after Wei Ying. If the food's even somewhat good, I'm coming here every day. Also? Nie Huaisang reaches across the table to swat Wang Ji with his menu. Since when do you have other friends? Rude. I am allowed to have friends, Wang Ji points out. He can feel his ears turning red. Mian Mian shakes her head. Oh, you have got it bad, my friend. So bad it's not even funny, Nie Huaisang agrees. He can't violently shush them without risking Wei Ying's attention, despite the fact that if anyone has ever deserved repeated and violent shushing, it's the two of them. We're just friends. Nie Huaisang snorts. Tell that to your face, Lan Zhan. Oh, wait, try that again. Tell that to your face, Lan Zhan. Asang's right. You had almost 3/4 of an expression on your face, which for you is like practically a musical number. Shut up, Wang Ji mutters. Wei Ying is right. He has no friends. He has 0 friends after this lunch. Sorry. Wei Ying is right. He has no friends. He has 0 friends after this lunch. He's going to go live at the top of a mountain where his phone won't even receive group texts. I mean, no shame in that game, Gaga. He is gorgeous. Nie Huaisang fans himself with his menu. If you don't ask him out, I will. Take a number, Mian Mian says with feeling, gazing over to where Wei Ying is setting down another table of sandwiches. Nie Huaisang elbows her. Aren't you married? She elbows him back. Aren't you straight? Nobody's that straight, Nie Huaisang breathes. I will give each of you $500 to change the subject right now, Wang Ji says, slowly and distinctly. The two of them exchange a look and dissolve into helpless giggles. He glares at them, the icy, disdainful glare that kept them and everyone else at bay in high school, and does precisely nothing now. I'm sorry, Nie Huaisang says, still giggling. Sorry. Lan Gaga, you're right. Stop with the murder eyebrows. He's right, he says to Mian Mian, wiping away tears of mirth. Be nice. I'm always nice, she asserts. You would cut a bitch and that's why I love you, Nie Huaisang says. End of flashback. Gosh, I love that so much. I love Lan Wangji having friends that tease him. Ooh. Okay. Nightless City is a labyrinthine, multi-level establishment with 3 different dance floors. The general aesthetic, Mongji thinks as he descends the stairs into the club, appears to be Satan's bachelor pad. The lights all have fiberglass covers to mimic the look of open flames. The banquettes in the lounge area are tufted black vinyl. The ceilings are made to look like they've been hewn from rock, as though the whole establishment is set up in some kind of subterranean lair, instead of the basement levels of an office building. The whole thing probably looks very cool at night, but at 5 p.m., with the chairs still stacked upside down on the tables, it looks about as sexy as a rainforest cafe. There's a man behind the black lucite bar. Wangji catches a glimpse of ink-black hair pulled into a high, glossy ponytail, and for a wonderful, horrible moment, he thinks it's Wei Ying. The man behind the bar is shorter than Wei Ying, though, and younger. He's cute in a baby-faced kind of way, but as they approach, Wangji gets the sense that there's something off about him. There's an emptiness to his face, a lack of feeling behind his eyes, which have the affectless, predatory look of a shark's. He greets them with an unpleasant leer, which doesn't touch his eyes. Okay, I'm trying to figure out who this is, because I thought it was going to be Shui Yang, but maybe it's Mo Xuan Yu if he looks like Wei Ying, but I think it's Shui Yang. Okay. Club is closed, he says in Mandarin. We open at 9. Cover starts at 10. He's slicing limes with short, vicious movements, juice and pulp coating his fingers. Naming Jue flashes his badge. We'd like to ask you a few questions. The bartender's smirk twists into a manic grin. He widens his eyes, showing the whites on all sides in mock astonishment. Cops, he exclaims. Are you lost? Do you know where you are? We're looking for this man. Wangji holds out a copy of the photo from Wei Ying's missing persons report. Have you seen him in here recently? His hands still dripping with lime juice, the bartender takes the photo and scrutinizes it for a moment. Oh, he's cute. He fixes Wangji with his unsettling wide-eyed stare. Is he single? He's missing. Try that again. He's missing, Yiming Jue says. Doesn't mean he's not single. Has he been in here recently? The bartender shrugs. A lot of people come in here. It's a very popular bar. You don't recognize him? Look again, Yiming Jue presses. Even I can't keep track of every hot Asian guy who comes in here. The bartender sighs dramatically, handing back the photo. Trust me, I've tried. Your name? Yiming Jue has his notepad out now. The bartender giggles. Cheng Mai? You got a family name? Probably. He picks up his knife and starts slicing limes again. It's only then that Wangji notices the man is missing a finger, the little finger on his left hand. What Wangji had originally taken for a leather wrist cuff is actually the base for a prosthesis. Yiming Jue rolls his eyes. We'd like to review your security footage from last weekend to see if our missing person is on there. Well, gosh. Ching Mai raises his manicured eyebrows and bats his eyelashes as if to say, little ol' me? I guess for something like that, you'd need to speak to the manager. He hisses it like a threat. Great, Yiming Jue rumbles. Are they here? Another dead-eyed smirk. Right this way, detective. He takes the knife he was using to slice the limes, wipes it off on a towel, and slides it into the top of his knee-high boot, which strikes Wangji as poor food handling safety and also a great way to cut one's leg. The bartender leads them back behind the bar, through a door marked employees only. They pass through the steamy, swamp-like air of the kitchen and up a flight of stairs to a closed door. Cheng Mai raps at the door, a sharp staccato pattern that might be a coded knock or might just be his own flourish. A muffled question comes from within. The cops are here, Cheng Mai sings. I think it's Cheng Mai. The door opens and he makes an exaggerated after you motion. The tacky hell motif is even more pronounced up here. The wallpaper is a deep, heavy red with a black flame pattern worked into it. There's a furry black rug on the floor, and another of the black vinyl couches they'd seen in the lounge area. The air is heavy with stale cigarette smoke. The back wall is dominated by a giant tropical fish tank, which gives the whole office a low-rent Bond villain vibe. Curiously, despite the obvious care and expense that have been taken with the office's decor, every available surface and bit of floor space is piled with bar supplies. Stacked up rolls of toilet paper and paper towels, industrial-sized bottles of hand soap, cardboard boxes with cocktail straws, 200 count, printed on the side. There are two men lounging on the couch. The guy seated closer to the door's pant legs have ridden up, and Wang Ji can see a shadow that's likely the bottom of an ankle holster. Another guy leaning against the wall next to them, wearing a jacket indoors, which Wang Ji has to assume means he's armed as well. Two more men sitting perched on stacks of boxes. No visible weapons on either, but plenty of places for either of them to conceal one. Sitting with his feet propped up on the dusty, dark wood of the desk is a man Wang Ji recognizes as Wen Chao, Wen Rohan's younger son and the on-paper owner of Nightless City. He has a childish, sulky look that Wang Ji remembers from the photos he's seen of the man. Apparently it's his default facial expression. But word is that he's got a vicious temper, and Wang Ji knows that he's been implicated in several particularly nasty assaults. He's dressed to match the decor, in a shiny red shirt with black embroidery down the front. Behind him stands a man maybe 10 or 15 years his senior, built like a tank, who regards them with folded arms and a blank, unimpressed stare. A bodyguard, Wang Ji thinks. In his own establishment, surrounded by his own people? Are the Wens really so paranoid? Cheng Mai pulls the door closed behind them and leans against it. I'm going to double check that. Okay, never mind. It is Cheng Mai. All right, where was I? Cheng Mai pulls the door closed behind them and leans against it. He pulls the knife out of his boot and starts playing with it, flipping it idly between his fingers, smiling maliciously to himself. Wang Ji is uncomfortably aware that they're shut up in a room with one exit and seven members of a well-known crime syndicate. Ni Mingjue was right. This was a bad idea. He catches his partner's eye. Ni Mingjue glares at him, then looks away. Wang Ji can hear him take a deep, controlled breath. Wen Chao opens his arms in a welcoming gesture, but doesn't get up. Detectives, what can I do for you? He asks, baring his teeth in what might pass for a smile on another person. Ni Mingjue shows him Wei Ying's photo. We're looking for this man. We have reason to believe he was here shortly before he disappeared. Disappeared? What a shame. Wen Chao takes the photo and leans back in his chair. He pulls out a cigarette, making eye contact with Ni Mingjue as he lights it. I'm sorry. I wish I could be of more help, but I've never seen this man before. He smiles insincerely around his cigarette. Wang Ji considers telling him that smoking in bars, and offices, for that matter, has been illegal in Seattle for more than 15 years. He has a momentary impulse to just start issuing citations wildly, but he knows, and Wen Chao clearly knows he knows, how outnumbered they are, how easily Wen Chao could pay the fine, how ridiculous he and Ni Mingjue would look bringing in a Wen lieutenant on something like a smoking citation. He grits his teeth. We'd like to take a look at your security footage from last week, Ni Mingjue says. See if we can spot our missing person. Shed some light on where he's been. Wen Chao hands the photo back. Of course, we'd be happy to help the Seattle Police Department with anything they need, he says with a bug-eyed simper. The flunkies clustered around the office snicker obediently. But we don't retain our security footage for more than 48 hours, unless there's some kind of incident or complaint. It's a waste of hard drive space. There's no way this is true, especially for an organization like the Wen Clan, but without a warrant, there's no way to press further. Does anyone with the initials XY work here? Wang Ji asks. Wen Chao laughs. He stares at them for a moment, as though waiting for them to say something more. Oh, you're serious? He laughs again, exchanging a glance with one of his men. Well, who can keep track? Bartenders, waitstaff, kitchen staff, security... He takes a long drag on his cigarette and blows the smoke directly at them. We have a lot of turnover. It's so hard to find reliable help these days. Wouldn't you agree, Cheng Mei? His voice twists the question into something dangerous. Wang Ji glances behind them, where the bartender is still leaning against the door. Sure, Cheng Mei replies in a bored voice, not taking his eyes off of the knife he's playing with. Wang Ji wonders if that's how he lost his finger. Somehow he doubts it. You must have a list of your most... It's probably Mingjue talking. You must have a list of your most recent staff. I'm sure we do, Wen Chao drawls. But we take employee privacy very seriously, especially in the current, shall we say, political situation. So unless you've got a warrant, I don't think I can be of any help to you. When Julio can show you out. The bodyguard moves smoothly around the desk and starts advancing on them. Who has access to your letterhead? Ye Mingzhe asks suddenly. I'm sorry, my what? Wen Chao asks, taking his feet down from the desk and sitting forward. The bodyguard pauses, glancing at him. My letterhead? Our missing person had a note from someone with the initials XY, a Nightless City letterhead. How many people would have access to that? Wen Chao scowls. Any number of people. He stands up, advancing on them slowly. The janitorial staff, the delivery guy, anyone who felt like walking in off the street and taking some off the coat check stand. Anyone with a fucking laser printer could have access to my letterhead. He comes to a stop directly in front of Ye Mingzhe, peering up into his face with narrowed eyes. I hope you're not insinuating that one of my employees had something to do with this man's disappearance. To Wang Ji's left, a man stands up from where he's been perched on a stack of boxes. Out of the corner of his eye, he can see the men who have been sitting on the couch get up as well. A few of them put their hands in their jackets or in their pockets. Most people, even people with extensive firearms experience, are terrible shots. There's a world of difference between firing off rounds down at the shooting range and trying to shoot with any kind of reliability in a real stressful situation, when your heart rate is elevated and adrenaline is coursing through your body. Even for these men, career criminals who no doubt have some real-world experience, accuracy is going to be an issue in a high-stakes situation, especially with a smaller handgun of the type one might carry concealed on one's person. Wang Ji knows this, just as he knows that at this range, with these numbers, none of that matters at all. He and Mingzhe are fish in a barrel. A cold drip of alarm runs down his spine. He takes a step closer to Ye Mingzhe, keeping his hands loose and open at his sides. We're just trying to find our missing person, Ye Mingzhe says, and Lan Wangji can tell he's experiencing the same adrenaline spike. His voice is low and gravelly. It's the voice he uses when he's about to lose it on someone. Fear and anger have always looked the same on Ye Mingzhe. He draws himself up to his full height and glares down at Wen Chao. Are you sure you've never seen him? He holds up the photo again. He's your cousin's roommate. You don't recognize him? Ah, yes. How is Wen Qing? Still a bitch? Ye Mingzhe snarls. Is that how you talk about your family? Just the members of my family who are bitches, Wen Chao sneers. Wang Ji puts a hand on the back of Ye Mingzhe's arm. We've taken up enough of your time, he says firmly. More than enough, Wen Chao says. But he takes a step back, and the tension of the room in the room cools off slightly. He wags a finger at them. You're lucky I'm in such a good mood today, he scolds. I'd hate to have to contact your captain about how his detectives are bursting into random businesses, demanding to see lists of everyone who works there. The nightlife community would be very upset to hear about it. The bodyguard guy starts herding them toward the door, and to Wang Ji's immense relief, the other men in the room part to let them pass. Bye-bye, detectives, Cheng Mei says with a deranged half-smile as he moves away from the door. They walk back to Wang Ji's car, not speaking. Ye Mingzhe is breathing heavily with suppressed rage. Wang Ji starts to open the driver's side door, but Ye Mingzhe grabs it. That was an unnecessary risk, he says. I shouldn't have let you talk me into coming down here. Wang Ji swallows, adrenaline still pinballing through his veins. He nods slowly. From now on, Ye Mingzhe growls, pointing a shaking finger in Wang Ji's face. We're doing this differently, or I'm not working this case with you. He starts to back away. I'm walking back to the station. I don't want to fucking be around you right now. Back to our flashback. After lunch at the cafe, Wang Ji spends the rest of the afternoon with Nie Huaisang and Mian Mian, wandering through art galleries in the park. Thanks to what is clearly a Herculean effort on both of their parts, they manage to only tease him about Wei Ying a little more. I have a friend who does custom calligraphy on the side, Wang Jiga. I'm sure he'd be happy to do the invitations when you marry the hot waiter. He's feeling pleasantly tired as he walks back up the hill towards his apartment, loose and relaxed from the sun. He doesn't notice the sound of raised voices until he's almost upon them. I don't know who this is. Oh. What do you think you're doing? The man's voice is aggressive, even hostile. Wang Jiest quickens his step. If there's some kind of altercation happening outside of his apartment building, it behooves him to defuse the situation. Exercising my First Amendment rights? There's no mistaking Wei Ying's voice, which is an eerie, angry calm. Wang Ji's heart sinks. He turns the corner and almost runs directly into Wei Ying, who is holding up a cell phone pointed at a red-faced, uniformed police officer. They're facing each other near the side exit from the building stairwell. Dave, the homeless man who often sleeps in the stairwell doorway, is hurriedly gathering up his few belongings from the sheltered area. What's going on? Wang Ji asks, not sure which of them he's talking to. Hello, Lam Wang Ji, Wei Ying says, keeping his eyes and his phone pointed at the other cop. It's a small thing, but it stings. Wei Ying has never called him Lam Wang Ji before. The cop rolls an exasperated eye towards Wang Ji. Keep moving, sir. This doesn't concern you. He turns back to Wei Ying. Turn off the camera, buddy. It's against the law for you to be recording me without my consent. Actually, it's not, Wei Ying says with that same deliberate calm, raising one eyebrow. He is correct, Wang Ji says. State law says that it's legal to record something happening in a public place, and that includes on-duty police officers. That gets Wei Ying's attention. He spares Wang Ji a quick, surprised glance. What are you, a lawyer? The cop snaps. His name tag reads Petty. No. He shows the man his badge. Now, tell me what's going on, Officer Petty. Like magic, Petty's whole demeanor changes. He rocks back on his heels, blinking, the belligerent thrust going out of his neck. Well, detective, this... He gestures towards the doorway, but Dave is long gone at this point. Wang Ji hopes he's doing all right. He'll have to track him down and check on him. Petty clears his throat. I was attempting to clear a trespasser from this property when this guy just walks up with a cell phone and starts recording. Wang Ji turns to Wei Ying, who's still recording away. There's no trace of friendliness in his face or even of recognition. He's still and guarded, lines of tension drawing down the sides of his mouth. Is that what happened? Wang Ji asks, and winces inwardly at the sound of his voice, which is cold and officious, his cop voice. I was just observing, Wei Ying says with a hot, humorless laugh. Calling Dave a trespasser is a stretch, but yeah, I wasn't interfering. I'm within my rights to record something happening in a public place. His hand is trembling, just slightly, where it holds the phone. You are, Wang Ji agrees, trying to put a world of reassurance into the words, trying to make them say, trust me. But all he can see in Wei Ying's blank face, that there's no trust to be had. It's as though all the conversations they've had in the last couple of months, all the late-night confessions and warm greetings over coffee, the large, formless thing that was coming into existence between them have all been wiped out. Wei Ying stares at him like he's a stranger. It seems like no crime is being committed here, Wang Ji says to Officer Petty. He turns his back, effectively dismissing the man. Petty splutters a bit, but stomps off. Wang Ji watches Wei Ying watch Officer Petty walk away. Wei Ying slowly lets the hand holding the phone drop down to his side and exhales a long, shuddering breath. His eyes are large and damp and far away. Without thinking, Wang Ji reaches out to put a hand on his shoulder. Wei Ying flinches away from him, his face suddenly blazing with anger. He stares at Wang Ji for a long moment, his jaw working as though he's chewing on all the words he's forcing himself not to say. Then he turns on his heel and stalks back into the building, alone. Author's end notes. Thanks, everyone who's been commenting and leaving kudos. Each and every single one makes my entire day. When I need a break from writing, I've been working on a silly, fun fan vid, and it's finally done. Check it out. And there's a link to their Tumblr, so I will encourage you to also check that out, and also to be going back to the fic and leaving comments and kudos. Wang Ji and Wei Ying are correct that in Washington State, it's legal to record an off-duty police officer in public. For more in-depth explainer on how to safely and ethically film police misconduct, check out this resource from Teen Vogue. And there's a link to that, too. Coming next week in Chapter 5, here comes the angst. A trip to the hospital. Some other stuff, too, but Chapter 5 is getting kind of long, so it might end up being Chapters 5 and 6. Oh, boy. I mean, I always worry when someone says, here comes the angst. I feel that's a rational response. But that end is tough, right? Because I feel like both of them, I think in sort of different ways, right, have been having their relationship exist in this liminal space on the roof, right, where neither of them actually are involved in each other's lives at all. And so it's easy to have a one-on-one relationship in that way when you don't have to be fitting in to anything. And Lan Wangji, you know, brings Wei Ying in a bit to his life by bringing his friends to the cafe. And it seems like things are going to be normal, right? But of course, there's the reality that intrudes of Lan Wangji being a cop and Wei Ying's experience, one assumes, with cops. Tough moment of probably realization on Wei Ying's side also. I am looking forward. We did get a little bit of, I think we know something's up with the Nightless City. Even if Lan Wangji doesn't have any evidence of it yet. That seems clear to me. So I'm looking forward to reading more, and I will talk to you guys then. Bye.